Thank you, and I promise to kill no more NIC presentations this week. This presentation is a walkthrough of a collaboration between our immunization program and the Oregon Health Plan for children's immunization data. What I'm going to be covering today is the scope of that collaboration and the benefits that both sides have received from this collaboration and a few examples of some of the products that have been generated out of this. Now, a little background. Our IIS in Oregon is Oregon Alert, and we collect immunization records from, we think, about 97% of immunization providers and payers. Submission is not mandatory, but compliance is very high. And we have immunization records. When we look at the kids that are born in the state and track them, we see, depending on whether they're teens or young kids, it's between 90 to 95% of them have immunization records extending up over time, you know, past a birth record. And we get all the publicly given immunizations. Now, the Oregon Health Plan is our broad label that describes both Medicaid and SCHIP kids. You know, the expansion is up to about 185% of the federal poverty level at the time of this data and study, and it covers about 40% of Oregon children. You know, that about 40% of kids have some period of enrollment on these public programs, and that makes the Oregon Health Plan the largest payer source of information for children's immunizations in the state of Oregon. Now, the Oregon Health Plan has routinely submitted administrative billing payer data to the registry for an extended period. And we have also, in the immunization program, helped them with their plan assessment for a number of years. But starting in 2008, we started asking for additional information. We wanted to expand the scope of our collaboration with them. And that data included getting encounter data on a yearly basis, as well as getting more enrollment data and length of enrollment data to match to our records. Now, as probably everyone is aware of, you know, benefit to collaboration immediately is an increase in available immunization data. We've done this with them for many years, but we'd never really quantified, you know, what really are we getting out of this in the immunization program? What really is OHP getting out of this? You know, OHP requires all of their clinicians, all of the managed care plans they contract with, to submit administrative data to them that covers immunizations. They have a very large data set, you know, almost half the kids in the state, and it's a reasonable question from their side to ask, what really do we add to their data? They are a large payer, should be an immaculate set of payer information, and we hear a lot of discussion about why not just use billing and payer data to estimate immunizations with. Well, we wanted to look and prove to them that we really are showing or adding something of benefit. You know, so what I've started to do to, or when we talk through today, is starting with immunization data on the alert side, just looking at our clinical data, you know, not the administrative or billing data that they give to us or other sources may give to us, but what are just clinicians giving to us? And compare this to what does the Oregon Health Plan have for their billing and administrative data for immunizations? You know, our concern is, well, how much overlap is there, and what are both sides getting out of this collaboration? Now, when we look at a level of immunization visits, not individual immunizations, but on visits by just date of encounter on which immunizations are given, and we look at the combined records for the kids that are enrolled in Oregon, the Oregon Health Plan, compared to Alert, well, of those kids, in total, 5% of those total kids for their visits, are only in the Oregon Health Plan data. So the immunization registry has 95% of the visits for immunizations for those children. 72% of that visit data is in common. Both sources, our clinical source and their payer source, both contain that, and 23% is only in our alert clinical data. So from an Oregon Health Plan perspective, when they combine their data with ours, they're gaining 23%. That's what they're missing. And that has a huge effect on their immunization coverage assessment. But in a broader context, and from our point of view in the immunization program, you know, they have a huge set of data. They have a very large set of data covering all encounters that at least have been billed and recorded, whereas our immunization data is a small part of that world. And we're a little more interested in putting our immunization data into that context. And on this, and I do need to give credit to the Michigan Registry and Kevin Domkowski. They've done a lot of work prior on embedding immunizations into more of an encounter and service context, especially for special populations. And what we're doing here is extending that a bit to a larger population. So one of the problems with just working in registry data is that we're generally blinded to what is going beyond, what's happening beyond immunizations. You know, if when we don't see a kid coming in and getting a shot, we don't have a record, so we don't know what else is going on for them. Are they coming into providers that aren't giving shots? Are they accessing a variety of medical providers, such as urgent care or alternate providers? Are they coming into a medical home and somehow getting overlooked? We don't know. So, from our registry perspective, by joining with Oregon Health Plan, one thing we gain is that we can start looking at further questions such as, you know, how many of the holes in an immunization record are missed visits versus a provider encounter where nothing is given? Are some types of providers more likely to see kids and not give shots? And do some providers give shots during sick visits and others don't? And what's the role of medical homes and urgent care? Are those leading to fewer or more shots being given? Now, there are challenges, though, in trying to use immunization data together with encounter data. We have to define what visits are eligible to get shots on. You know, are urgent care visits shot eligible? What providers, even if they are legally allowed to give shots, should we expect to be giving shots? And when you look at data that comes in on encounters from various clinics and health plans, there's differences in coding and reporting style back to the Oregon Health Plan. You know, trying to create a common denominator of what is an eligible shot visit based on encounter data is a little difficult. And as well as, you know, defining what sick visits do we really expect our providers to give shots on realistically, not just in terms of ACIP schedule or recommendations, but what is realistic to expect them to do. And in this pass, at least, we're using a very broad net to define what a shot-eligible visit is. So we're defining this in our data by it being a non-emergent visit, and not an inpatient visit either. It's a medical provider that could give shots and that we might expect to. So even though an Oregon pharmacist and some alternate providers are allowed to give shots, we weren't including them in this. And that there's a CPT or IDCD9 code that indicates there was a routine evaluation that was performed. And we were including sick child visits because at this point it's a little difficult to screen out what is an eligible one and what isn't based on the encounter data record. So one example I want to go through on this is the fourth DTAP. You know, we hear from our providers in the field, you know, that when we don't see fourth DTAPs, we hear from them anecdotally all the time, the kids aren't coming in. So it's been a question we've had forever. Are these kids seeing providers during the time when they should be getting a fourth DTAP? You know, how much weight do we put on our anecdotal accounts from providers, or how much should we think that it's parents? How much should we think that it's other aspects of the healthcare system that really should be held accountable for that low completion rate on fourth DTAP we see? So if we want to look at an intervention, certainly we'd want to know whether we should be focusing on providers or on redesign of benefits or on parents. So one of the things we looked at is we took a look at of the OHP kids that had three DTAPs on schedule. And the question was, did they receive a fourth DTAP, and did they have a shot-eligible encounter between 15 to 19 months when the fourth DTAP was due? You know, in Oregon, we have quite a few parents that are vaccine hesitant, but when we look at kids that have three DTAP on schedule, have all their shots really on schedule, that's not the group of parents that really have doubts about vaccination. That's the group of kids that should, in a good healthcare delivery model, they would be getting the fourth DTAP. So the result, when we look at this, of those kids that had three DTAP on schedule, 69% got their fourth DTAP on schedule, 13% had no fourth DTAP and no encounters. You know, they've slipped through the cracks, or there's something else going on. And these kids were enrolled in OHP at this time, too. So they did have coverage. That wasn't a barrier. And 18% didn't have a fourth DTAP, but did have a provider encounter between 15 to 19 months. The ratio 18% to 13%, around 60% of the kids that were not getting a fourth DTAP were having provider encounters. So that shifts our focus a little bit to wanting to know what kind of encounters, what providers those are. You know, those kids are being seen, and there's a potential there for them to get a shot. Now, for the Oregon Health Plan, the types of benefits that they're receiving from the collaboration, oh, there's numerous ones. The first one is that we're trying to help them move beyond looking at HEDIS assessment. You know, health plans generally use a HEDIS measure for immunizations. You know, they're assessing shots at 24 months of age for usually a large series. But as our Oregon Health Plan has found, you know, that kind of assessment measure at age two gives them limited information on which to really be thinking about basing interventions on or changing their policy. You know, and a lot of times just the big series completion rates only tells you how you're doing on fourth DTAP uptake. You know, that's the real limit in most of their series. They want and are a good market for more information about what other shots and what other time periods you should be looking at to improve their performance. And one of the issues too for them is, you know, they take their up-to-date rates and their immunization data as being an indicator of what is the overall quality of care that their children are receiving. You know, immunizations are a readily measured thing. So they want to take that and use it as a proxy for how well do their plans perform, how well do their providers perform, but that summary measure just at 24 months doesn't really tell them much about how timely and appropriate these children are getting their well child care at the 2, 4, 6 month type, you know, encounters. They want more information to evaluate that. And also, this feeds into some larger discussions within OHP too. You know, how are they doing across time and across regions of the state? This is one of the products we've done for them. You know, we look at, well, are they, if they have a concern about regional delivery of services, we do mapping for them on this and other small area basis. This one we did for their 2007 two-year-olds that were enrolled in OHP across all the counties in Oregon. And you know, there are a couple of counties, Douglas, kind of in the southern central part of the, or lower southern part of the state, Clatsop in the far northwest corner, where there are some issues. And generally we have an upper Willamette Valley pattern that includes Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington. Those are our most urban counties. And they're all fairly similar. Then there are some other counties, Douglas and Lane, that aren't doing as well. There are lower rates. And they had never seen any sort of a breakdown regionally on how they're actually performing when it's a population county-based breakdown like this. Their data before this had usually only been based on some of their individual health plans that they contract for services in some areas for. And when we showed this to them, and I took this slide to their medical director's meeting, the director of the largest IPA in Douglas County got up afterwards and said, "But why are immunizations that important?" Well, I think we just found out why the rates were low when we did that. You know, that's the kind of information that when we make them aware of this, they can actually design interventions and they can work with it. They can work with their personnel. They can work with that recalcitrant IPA director and his staff, or at least work around him some. Now, one of the other examples of something that they're getting out of this that they're benefiting from is that the health plan in Oregon, historically, enrollment lengths were set at 6 months, and at the end of 6 months, they would review eligibility. So they'd go back to parents. You know, most of the kids got enrolled at birth, and they'd go back to parents at 6 months, and they'd ask them to provide more documentation to basically redo the enrollment process. And anytime you go back to a Medicaid population or even to a general population and ask for more information, there's always going to be some that fall off the grid. They just don't do it. They don't fill out the paperwork. They don't meet the eligibility requirements, or you know, there's some issue why they're not going to continue their enrollment. And their question was, does this really affect continuity of care? And does it affect up-to-date rates? Because they were looking at the up-to-date rate as being an indicator of how good, you know, the care was and continuity of care was being continued for these kids. So when we looked at their population by length of enrollment, what we found is, well, the kids that were enrolled under 180 days and the kids that were enrolled 180 to 364 days under 1 year look the same, and they look very poor for up-to-date rates. That a six-month enrollment block was not working well for continuity of care. It was creating too many disjunct periods where these kids didn't have a provider. And the enrollment length between 6 months and a year actually was doing the same. So our recommendation was look at expanding your enrollment length up to 1 year at a minimum for these kids. Now, that population that's enrolled for 1 year that has good established medical homes is doing a little better than the average population in Oregon for up-to-date rates. And this is a piece of information that they took back to the legislature and used in as part of their argument for expanding their enrollment period for kids, and it was a successful argument. Now, what we're doing in the future with them for collaboration is that even before the national health reform, we had already expanded the Oregon health plan up to 300% of the federal poverty level. So in effect, we're going to be going from having 40% of the kids spending time in the Oregon health plan, potentially up to 60% of the kids. That it is going to be the majority of Oregon kids may have time under the Oregon health plan in the future. And the results then that we get from this sort of analysis are going to increasingly reflect the mainstream of our population. It's not just a special population anymore. And we have a lot of work with them that set in the future for looking at timeliness. They've already started to incorporate some of our concern about age-appropriate immunizations into their contracts with their providers. So it's not just now that they want to look at HEDIS measures at 24 months. They want to look at the full gamut of what shots are due at what points in time specifically. And I'll have a presentation this afternoon that looks a little bit more at the timeliness issues with this population. But that's really all I have for you today. And if there are questions.
Sherry?
I do have a question. And that was very interesting. Thank you for the presentation. The 18% that had a provider encounter and didn't have a fourth DTaP, as an example, was that in alert or in the OHP data or either, I think it was?
Those would be the kids that, were enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan and that we were tracking through immunization data in either system.
Okay.
Or in both systems.
Great. So is there any consideration that you've made just as far as how accurate the documentation is? We find in Washington that providers don't always bill or claim or provide encounter data that is accurate or complete, and that they could be getting the fourth DTaP. If you went to the medical record, it could be in there, but that it didn't get into the registry or get into the health plan data because they miscoded it or didn't bother to code it. Is that an issue in Oregon?
It's a minor issue. There's some regional pieces where it might be important. We actually took this data and did some capture, recapture analysis to look at just for estimates of how much might we be missing out of either system. And we're only seeing about, we're thinking that we're only missing 2-3% of all potential immunization and encounters based on that sort of analysis. That's one reason we were looking at the split between clinical on the alert side versus administrative on OHP, so that those two together would give a, you're coming from different sources, would give a very broad conjoint picture of what was going on.
I just had a question on your Medicaid data, your Medicaid billing data. I was just curious as to how you have vaccine-specific data within your Medicaid billing system. In our state of Massachusetts, providers can't submit claims with vaccine-specific CPT codes. Because vaccines are covered by the VFC program, they can only submit the CPT code for vaccine administration. So I'm curious, in Oregon, how they submit vaccine-specific claims, since it's covered by the VFC program.
It is being submitted, though I cannot, I don't know the technical details of how that differs from, the specific form that you're using. We are picking it up, and we're one of the areas where OHP tends not to end up with good immunization information is when, a kid has gone to a source that doesn't bill for either administration or for the vaccine. For these kids, also in Oregon, providers that are giving VFC vaccine will submit it generally to alert. That's a requirement under the VFC program. They submit that data back to alert in some form.
Any other questions? Well, I think that was two interesting presentations. So it's nice to see the use of the registry and the information in these two different perspectives. So I want to give a round of applause for the speakers and the presentation.